Hello and welcome to Spawned, a common sense, generally fun, and hopefully helpful discussion on parenting and parenting culture. Hey, I'm Kristen Chase.
And I'm Liz Gumbiner. We're the co-founders of CoolMomPics.com. Today, we are so happy to welcome back journalist and working mom expert Catherine Goldstein to talk about a big breaking story we've been chatting about this week, the huge impact of the COVID pandemic on the long-term career potential for working mothers.
Yes.
We will get to that shortly, as well as our cool picks of the week right after this. Today's episode of Spawned is brought to you by our friends at Breyers Carb Smart, who's partnering with America's Farmers for 100% grade A milk and cream. By now, we know you've heard us raving about our new favorite frozen treat, Breyers Carb Smart, available in tubs and those delicious bars and flavors like caramel swirl, chocolate-covered almond, vanilla, peanut butter. Each has only 150 calories or less and just 3 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. Fabulous if you're cutting back on the carbs just a bit like I am, but don't want to cut back on the frozen treats during the heat wave. So here's a special offer just for our listeners from Breyers Carb Smart to satisfy your next sweet tooth craving, which will probably be like in an hour if you're like me. Go to Breyers.com/spawned to get a special $2 off coupon. That's $2 off to enjoy delicious Breyers Carb Smart frozen treats. They're especially great for folks doing low carb, but honestly, our kids like it too. So that's Breyers.com/spawned to print your $2 off coupon. Do it now. Stick it in your wallet. Then you can remember to grab it at your next shopping trip or even use it online. You can find it at Target, Kroger, Amazon Fresh, or wherever you shop. All right, so let's tell you a little bit more about our guest. You may remember Catherine from episode 157, right when we talked about the new generation of working mothers. But if you missed that episode, go listen to it. Not at this moment, but in like 40 minutes, go listen to it. She's a mom to a 4-year-old son and more recently, a pair of adorable twins. She's also the creator and host of the wonderful Double Shift podcast. It's the first reported podcast to focus exclusively on a new generation of working mothers, treating the experience and identity of working moms with journalistic seriousness and curiosity. And by background, Catherine's an award-winning journalist. She was a 2017 Nieman Fellow at Harvard University, which is very impressive, and the former editor of VanityFair.com. And she has a track record of conversation-setting work around her expertise on working moms, including the viral New York Times op-ed, The Open Secret of Anti-Mom Bias in the Workplace, which we talked about last year with her. And I was a Sheryl Sandberg superfan, and then her lean-in advice failed me. So she's got a lot of great things to say. She now runs Double Shift Productions, an independent journalist company, and we are so happy to welcome her back today. Catherine, especially with baby twins, we're so happy you joined us.
Thanks so much for having
me. And you're awake?
I'm awake. I mean, I can't promise, like, I know this is going to take like 30 minutes, so I don't know if I'll be awake the entire time, but I'll... but I'm awake
right
now. We'll
try to keep it interesting. So let's jump right in. What happened was this week, I saw an article shared by 538.com, which is one of my favorite data nerd sites, generally during the political season, but they write about data on all kinds of stuff. And they shared an article called How the Pandemic Could Force a Generation of Mothers Out of the Workforce. And if that headline wasn't terrifying enough.
Yes.
Like, if you read the article, let me just summarize quickly. They wrote, studies have shown that women already shoulder much of the burden of caring for and educating their children at home. Now, they're also more likely than men to have lost their jobs thanks to the pandemic and the collapse of the childcare and public education infrastructure that so many people rely on will only magnify these problems, even pushing some women out of the labor force entirely. And so the crux of the issue is childcare just isn't widely available now. It disproportionately falls on women, but that it's going to have longer term impact than just day to day. So, Catherine, what are you hearing from working mothers about this?
I have been talking to people and also been seeing a lot of these studies. And, you know, a lot of these predictions feel pretty scary and apocalyptic, honestly, in terms of women in the workplace, especially for mothers. You know, what I'm hearing from working moms, the ones that I have been informally talking to, you know, I think sometimes we get these like really hyped up stories from the media about like this person just immediately quit their job and really sort of dramatic stories. But what I'm sort of hearing is, you know, a lot of people I've talked to are still working and they're just like coming to this place, especially as we approach fall and have to deal with the coming non-opening of so many schools, that there's just this deep sense of despair about what lies in front of us, that what we went through this spring we thought was a temporary short-term sacrifice and now is being codified by public policy, basically, and the lack thereof, as like the new way of life. And that is just really horrifying to me and so many other people.
Yes. I mean, that's all anyone can talk about, at least in my Facebook feed. Although I have to say, I feel like the conversation, interestingly enough, in my feed is very much focused on children in school, and rightfully so. But I think that we're seeing more conversations now, this study in particular, and then more articles that have come out recently. Like, it's not just about school. This is a huge issue that has to do with parents in the workplace. And also, like, we're back again talking about childcare, which, like, I feel like we're always talking about childcare because it's just, it's inadequate. And now I think we're really seeing that. And I don't know, Liz, if I'm the only one, but I mean, that's all anyone's talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hearing that a lot as well. I mean, it's the balance between what do we do about school and, oh my God, childcare. But I think the interesting thing about this article, or the scary thing about this article, is it gives it a kind of longer term foreboding, horrible forecast that, you know, even in the article, Melissa Bocic, Vice President for Income Security and Childcare and Early Learning at the National Women's Law Center, she said, we're in danger of erasing the limited gains we've made for women over the past few decades, and especially women of color. And I thought about how when you take a break to raise children, you take 6 months off, a year off, 5 years off. Think of how hard it is for women to be taken seriously, to get back into the workforce, to justify that their time wasn't wasted. And now, what's going to happen, Catherine?
Well, the short answer is nobody knows what's going to happen. But I can tell you a pessimistic view of what I think is going to happen, or an optimistic view about what I think is going to happen. Which would you like to hear
first? Oh, it's like bad news, good news. I'm always a bad news person first. What about you, Liz?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, bad news first. We're ready. Pessimistic. Here we go.
Okay, bad news. This is the pessimistic version. You know, before the pandemic, there was a lot of evidence that women, especially mothers, really had a very hard time ever sort of gaining parity to fathers in the workplace. Like, if women have kids between the ages of 25 and 35, their earnings never recover relative to their male partners. And basically, you know, you hear a lot about the gender wage gap, but the gender wage gap historically is not between women and men, it's between mothers and everybody else. And it's like even more pronounced for mothers of color. So that was like the baseline bad place we're at. And so I think if the idea is that if women are taking off a lot of time and then trying to re-enter a really anemic workforce and labor market that, you know, the Great Depression took a decade to get through. I mean, so it's not like necessarily that the labor market would bounce back right away, that it not only would affect career prospects, but it's going to affect retirement. It's going to definitely affect lifetime earnings. And, you know, as mothers, I think sometimes we're really always focused on what our kids. But I think mothers really need to stand up for themselves right now and say, you know, honestly, I have a 5-year-old who is about to start kindergarten, and virtual kindergarten, which are like two horrifying words that should never have ever be said together. Yeah. So he's about to start virtual kindergarten, and he may not learn to read on time. That's definitely in the, you know, pantheon of things that could happen, or he may not get the math skills he needs. But in some ways, kids can recover from this faster than I think mothers can in terms of the social impact. So I think we really do need to like privilege what we need to do emotionally, financially, and sort of for our overall health and well-being to survive this, rather than just say like kids take precedence overall.
Yeah.
So that was my negative.
Okay, that was the negative,
negative prediction. If you want to comment on that.
Well, let's hear the positive. What's the positive?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So the positive is that there are a number of calls for and sort of conversations that I have been really interested in and have been brewing for a very, very long time that are finally starting to become more mainstream, like federally subsidized childcare. For example, there's some really bad predictions that 50% of all daycare childcare spots are going to just go away. Places are just going to go out of business. And so there's a talk about a childcare bailout. And I think that we're starting to gain momentum and people are starting to understand that childcare is essential for the workforce. Like, it was always been seen as an individual family problem and an individual thing for a mother to sort out on her own, and that society has no obligation to help in any way financially or logistically with childcare. And I think that conversation is starting to change. And I think because the childcare landscape is going to get so bad that there will have to be some federal bailout and subsidy. And I think that that's going to change the conversation about universal childcare a lot going forward and build a lot of momentum around that. So that's something positive, potentially positive, I see out of this. And I think we're going to see changes in the work week. Like, I think we're going to start seeing more 4-day work weeks changing in hours, and the idea that you just have to be on and available for like 40 or 50 or 55 hours a week for a white collar job is going to go away. And I think a lot of these things that mothers have had to deal with privately, like, are just for a long time. Like, none of this stuff is new, obviously. Like, mothers have been dealing with childcare failures and the fact that there's no school in the summer and they have to think of a million summer camps and pay a bunch of money for them for a long time. But I think this is now going to be out in the open. It's no longer seen as a niche mom only issue. It's now seen as a social issue and it has like larger economic impacts.
That is good. I agree with you. And I'm totally partisan with the hopes that the election goes the way I hope it goes in November. I think we will have a president who values and prioritizes the work of mothers and the need for childcare. So I am glad to hear your optimistic outlook that this may become an issue that becomes front and center, which it should have been a long time ago, but maybe this will force the hand. One of the things I want to talk about is this kind of flexibility idea that you brought up, because I think in some ways it's good. Like, a lot of employers are going to say, you know, more people can work from home, you can work flex hours. It turns out we don't need to maintain all this office space. We don't need to cram people into a, you know, open floor plan loft and have everybody working next to each other. And I think that's good. But I'm also concerned about like the multitasking that will put onto moms, because we all know multitasking isn't that great.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Pew data in the 538 article, it's really interesting. To our listeners, you really should look at it. The charts are fascinating and very, very simple, not just for data nerds like me. So they ask, you know, who manages children's activities? And 54% say the mother does more, 6% say the father. There are a lot of people who say it's parity. Who takes care of sick children? 47% says the mother does more, 6% says the father. Who handles household chores on top of everything else? 31% on moms, 9% on dads. So what does this mean for women trying to work while we factor in the needs of our kids as well? Like, those of us who are fortunate enough to be able to work from home, like I am.
Yeah.
You know, Kristen and I talked at the very beginning of the summer when all this was going on, and we said, okay, let's be super flexible. We just have to be, because there's going to be a day that I just have to drop everything and do something with the kids or manage them or do a doctor's appointment or whatever it is. So how do you reconcile with that, Catherine? Like, that on one hand, it's kind of a positive to be flexible. On the other hand, it keeps falling on the moms.
So I want to say, in terms of thinking optimistically about the future, what we're doing right now is not the optimistic version of the future where there's like no childcare and you're expected to work. And like, why don't you can be flexible by like working from like 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Like, that is not like an idealized future. What I would say is just that, all the studies that I have seen as well, in addition to the stats you shared, they also find that dads actually really overestimate how much they do. Like, when you ask them, like, what percentage of the time, like, how are you splitting this 50-50? They're like, yeah. And then they look at the time data and they're absolutely not splitting.
It's like screen time controls, but we need it for household and child care responsibilities. Yes. So we can point to it at the end of the week and be like, your bar isn't as high as mine.
Yes. sociologists do these time use studies, and it's always like super interesting because dads just consistently overestimate how much time they're spending, their proportion, you know, all that. So what we're doing right now is just a total crisis. It is not sustainable. And this idea of like somehow people are supposed to be executing virtual school and continuing to work full time is just completely outrageous. I mean, just the idea that this is being suggested as something that's supposedly happening or supposed to happen is just absolutely outrageous. It's not sustainable. It places insanely unfair burdens on mothers. I think it's actually going to create more anti-mom bias in workplaces because people know that mothers are going to be doing more of this and therefore are less productive, rightfully. But what I think is hopeful is that, like, for example, at my husband's employer, in order to save money, they're actually encouraging people to take family leave days off so they can get government like refund family leave for taking care of kids who are out of school. Huh. So that's actually a way to reduce costs. So a lot of people are working 4-day weeks or 3-day weeks. So it's a cost cutting measure for the company and also to better distribute childcare responsibilities, and both moms and dads mm-hmm. are taking that. But then it's really interesting. They're still full-time employees. They're maybe making slightly less because they're getting reimbursed at maybe a slightly lower rate, just depending on how much they make, but they're still full-time employees. And like, do they get basically what they needed to get done in yeah. 3 or 4 days done? Like, probably.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, not every job is like
Plus,
that.
Plus, there's
course.
Other issues tied back to that besides income, because insurance is still tied to employment in this country
right.
for so
right.
many people. And so what happens when you're working 3 days a week or 4 days a week at a job and you don't qualify for insurance anymore under their plan? Can you even
right.
make that choice to do that?
Right. Well, I think this is all like people who are still full-time, that they're using like the CARES Act basically to have the government pay them for some days that they're taking off for taking care of kids. But all of that stuff, I think, is going to need to change, because job share and part-time and flex time is going to become more and more common. And I think we're going to have to get around the insurance question on it, because that's just like another just uniquely American terribleness.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I see like dominoes falling right now. I also kind of just want to lay on the ground. I'm listening to all these issues and realizing how complex it is, right? And I think we've all been doing the best we can to cope. And like you said, Catherine, this is crisis right now. But as we think about everything this affects, right, it's so pervasive. You know, I do want to talk specifically about women of color, mainly Black and Latino moms, because this pandemic is affecting parents regardless of race and income. But Black and Latino communities are definitely carrying the heaviest burden. And I mean, some of the numbers, Liz, that we found are just insane.
Yeah. In an Axios article that was really good by Caitlin Owens, she talked about the disparity being particularly intense for women of color, and that Black mothers are paid only 54 cents for every dollar paid to a white father. She also wrote about how the childcare crisis created by the pandemic is horrible for parents regardless of race and income, as we all know, but Black and Latino communities are bearing the heaviest burden. And this had another chart about the share of parent concern with schools remaining closed, and it was more stark than I had imagined. So the fear of kids falling behind on social and emotional development with schools closed, women of color, it was 76%. White women, it was 62%. The fear of losing income if they can't work out of the house, women of color, 65%. White women, 41%. And then what about your kids not having access to technology? Women of color, 49%. White people, 17%. So there's like extreme disparities. And I imagine, you know, that goes right to the workforce too. If you look at that number of fear of losing income if you can't work out of the house, it goes back to this issue of taking away the strides that we've already made. Like, so much of what you're working towards, Catherine, is trying to get women to achieve some parity in the workforce. Like, what do we do? I know you've had like a brilliant CareCorp bailout idea.
Yeah. Well, so to briefly just comment on the stats that you shared, I think like what you're seeing there is like a really stark example of overlay of race and class. So
yes.
People who are women of color are more likely to work in blue collar and service jobs and jobs that require you to be out of the house. And I think that technology piece is a huge indication of class.
You know, what's interesting is that they actually, in the charts, they asked parents of color versus white parents, but they also ask people with income below 90K and over 90K, the disparity with the income difference was much less pronounced. So it was significant for parents of color. So clearly there are issues beyond income. Probably there's some sandwich generation issues where you're taking care of multiple people. Maybe you're caring for like elderly people or grandparents. Like, I think there's a lot of issues. There's community spread depending where you live. That to me was really interesting. It wasn't just socioeconomic, although obviously that's a huge part of it.
I think one thing that probably this study didn't quite reflect is that I think a lot of families in general, but definitely families of color, may be relying on grandparents for childcare.
Yes.
And or schooling, mm-hmm. proctoring. And so like, that I think could be a huge issue around technology barriers, like whether if you're going to need to have your 74-year-old mother do all the logins for the school, like you may have more concerns about your kid's ability to stay up on schoolwork and the tech literacy than if, for example, you had like a paid tutor who was doing that. So yes, I think that that also speaks to like what the existing caregiving arrangements may be in different families. But yes, I mean, I think it's really stark. And I think that a lot of service economy areas, and actually, you know, also in healthcare, like you'd think like healthcare industry is booming, but a lot of places are actually cutting back because like pandemic is not profitable in the healthcare sector, because that's like the totally messed up world we live in where we're talking about that. I think women of color are going to continue to feel the economic effects long after a supposed recovery has begun. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy to also talk about the idea like of trying to come up with some potential solutions, because it is a lot of doom and gloom right now.
Well, I saw you tweeted about a Care Corp bailout and I went, oh my God, this is brilliant immediately. And then you wrote an article about it in HuffPost. Can you just describe it?
Sure. So I've written about this idea of a Care Corp, which is sort of like the idea of an AmeriCorps or a Teach for America program, but for caregiving. And it could take a number of different forms. It wouldn't replace existing daycare centers, but it would sort of try to help fill in the gap for the coming at least year or two that we're sort of continuing to deal with these crises. And so it would recruit younger people who are healthy, who are either, you know, taking time off college, recent graduates, maybe high school graduates who don't have great job prospects because the economy is terrible, and sort of help train them and place them in doing either tutoring or proctoring virtual learning or providing sort of summer camp-like environments. They could be in people's homes. They could help with, you know, young children, baby, infant care when we're in places that that's not available, and sort of basically try to create the idea that caring for the next generation is a national priority. And this is like a patriotic, high status thing you can do, which I think would also start to change the conversation around care work as well. And so it could be funded through public-private partnerships or the federal government. It could be in local communities, or they could live in like empty college dorms or with families. So it's like a big picture solution idea to this current acute crisis that I've been thinking about.
I love it. I'm in.
I know. Sign me up. I'm glad that we have minds like yours coming up with solutions, because I feel like there's just a lot of freaking out, not a lot of solutions from the people in charge.
I agree. And maybe people will take a hint and be like, hey, this is a good idea. You know, like there's so many of us, right? And we all have this common bond of being parents, being moms. So, you know, it would be amazing if we could come together. But let's talk about mom shame, because Liz, we talked about this in a couple podcasts ago about how we feel like this topic and the schooling topic is sort of like the new mommy wars. And yeah. Liz, you're right. You know, this whole mom shame factor happening, and I'm seeing it as I'm getting texts from other moms who are talking about what they're deciding to do for school and talking about work. And, you know, there's this article in the Lily talking about mom shame. And I'm curious, Catherine, what are your thoughts on this? What can we do? How can we not play into it? Because it is fodder for sure, but how can we not play into this?
My first question is, can I curse on this podcast?
Yes.
How about hell yeah? There we go. We just took away the little checkbox that says clean, and now you can go ahead.
I am so fucking tired of people shaming mothers for the situation that we're in. And I am like just completely appalled by all of the burden society is placing on moms. Like, honestly, I thought that after this spring, like the burdens that we place on mothers could not be more intense. But now apparently we are tasked with solving like every problem with capitalism, patriarchy, and racism in time for back to school.
Yes, like, about right.
Yes.
And it's just completely outrageous, you know, as people are totally grasping at anything they can do to try to get through this next phase. I think it's important to be self-reflective about privilege and educational inequities. And these are definitely issues that are going to be with us for a long time. And I think we need to continue to examine them. But sort of the idea that basically if you figure out anything that is going to help you survive this time, that somehow you are a bad person, or that you're like disadvantaging other children, or you're doing the wrong thing, or you should feel ashamed of yourself, like, is just totally crazy. Like, the government and society have completely, completely abandoned us. And we need to do what we can do to help our families get through this, because also we can't organize and we can't fight for other people's children and we can't try to make the world better when we don't have our own childcare. We have to think about all other children, but we also have to place the oxygen masks on ourselves first. And like, there's just no other way around it. We're in a crisis. And I just hate that people are feeling so shamed and judged by their choices. So anyone listening to this, I would love to grant you permission to tell anyone to fuck off.
I love it.
I will say, though, I kind of understand where some of it comes from. And it comes out of fear. It comes out of envy. It comes out of frustration that we don't have all the resources we need. And I'll tell you, we started our site in 2006.
Yes.
And when the recession got really bad around 2010, maybe 2010, was the first time that we saw people getting angry if we posted something that seemed expensive, like really angry about it. And I can see why, you know, when people post about, well, I'm going to have a homeschooling pod because I just can't in any good conscience send my child back into school, then it makes the moms that have to work and have to send their child back into school be like, oh, yeah, well, and so I can see where it happens. I think we're desperately trying to defend our choices. People who don't have those choices are feeling desperate in their own way. So I understand where it's coming from. But oh, God, you're right. I love that you brought up the oxygen mask. Like, we got to take care of ourselves so that we can take deep breaths with all that oxygen and try to look out for each other and understand everyone's situation is different.
Yeah. There are only really, really shitty choices right now. So like, the first 5 to 10 choices that we would all prefer are like not available to us.
Right, right. That's a great point.
So like, being like, I have to figure out the best solution. There's no best solution. Like, there is the best under the really terrible circumstances solution, but there's not like actually legitimately good solutions available right now. And I think the thing is that I do think people are so stressed, they're so frustrated, they're so worried about, there's no precedent for what we're going through. So there's not like, oh, I'll just do what I did last year. It worked out fine. Like, there's no like leaning back on like history of how to do this. The thing that I really want to encourage people to think about is, we've been told like childcare and all this stuff is our individual responsibility to figure out. And therefore we can judge or shame other people's choices, or they can judge and shame our choices. Let's turn the firing squad outward at the people who are really to blame, which is our elected officials and our society that has completely abandoned us and provided us with no safety net and have underfunded public schools and have provided no childcare infrastructure. Those are the people we should be mad about, not about a mom who's making a different choice than us.
Preach! Yeah, I mean, that's an important reminder. We're barking up the wrong tree.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad you reminded us of that. And I think that's a good place to direct the anger and frustration. Speaking of positive things we can do with our anger and frustration and desperation, tell me what we can do about this in the short term, at least. Like, what are the advocacy groups or campaigns we can get involved with? Like, I know you shared demandsafeschools.org. There's like a big thing on August 3rd. There's the Save Child Care Initiative, where there's a petition to help reach out to Congress. Like, who are you following? What accounts are good? Like, what are you aware of that we can do so that we feel like we're being proactive and productive?
Yeah, I think this is a really hard question. I think one of the reasons this has been so anguishing is that it hasn't been a lot of like, okay, well, if you're upset about this, do this, because it's all being like handled by different public school districts. And it feels like these monolithic things. Like, yes, we can continue to call our representatives and ask them to, you know, pass the HEROES Act and all that stuff. But sometimes that doesn't feel like it's making an immediate impact. In absence of a national sort of movement for childcare, although I would love to see a childcare march. If anyone who's listening wants to try to organize that, I think that would be amazing. There's initiatives around schools, but I think like an actual, you know, focusing on childcare would be very powerful. But honestly, I feel like getting really local with this, it's not necessarily about like this big organization, but like, what can you do in your local community to make this better? Is it getting more involved with your PTA? Is it helping raise money for your local YMCA so they can offer scholarships for kids whose parents can't stay home with them for virtual school? You know, ways that you can help your neighbors. Are there mutual aid networks in your neighborhood? Like, sometimes the solutions aren't like one big monolithic national solution. I mean, I think that that could help. But in the meantime, I think we have to do the work of finding what is happening in our communities and getting more involved. And maybe that doesn't feel dramatic, but that actually can have a really big impact.
I think that's great.
That's so helpful.
And I think especially to keep in mind that this isn't just about right now, this second, and that I need help this week. I mean, our immediate needs come first. But going back to the original premise of the article we first talked about, this is a long-term issue that's going to affect working moms and women, and particularly women of color disproportionately, for a long time if we don't resolve this. And we're going to lose a lot of the ground that we've made up over the years. And I think we have a lot on the line here. And so I hope we can keep talking about this and finding productive ways. I'm all in for a march. How about you, Kristen?
Yeah, I am. Who's going to watch the kids, though?
Oh, I'm bringing them. My kids are
I'm talking about
pros.
The little ones. No, I thought this was kind of a funny, like, we want to have a childcare march and then we have no childcare to actually have a childcare
march. Well, it's funny. I was on a call with someone and they're like, yeah, a march. Everybody bring a mask and a baby. Everybody bring a mask and a baby.
I'd have to borrow a baby.
I have an extra baby if anyone wants to borrow one of my babies.
I have a lot of masks, though.
Well, listen, we've spoken a lot about so many issues, right? And we've mentioned a lot of articles. We will link all of them up over on our podcast page on coolmompics.com. So head over there. They're really fantastic articles. They are worth your time to read. And also, another fantastic read, Catherine, on Twitter, you're on Instagram, of course, your site. What are the best ways for people to find you? I mean, obviously, subscribing to your podcast, but what are the best ways for folks to get in touch with you and find you?
Twitter at KGEEE, and I think you guys can link to this. I'm on Instagram. Go to the Double Shift website, and you can sign up for my newsletter. I definitely check out the podcast, and if you're into the podcast, you can also become a member. Me and senior producer Rachel McCarthy, who's married to an emergency room PA who has been taking care of COVID patients, have been having like an ongoing, us very sort of intimate series of conversations about being working moms in the COVID era that's like very unfiltered that we're doing for members. So if that's something that people are interested in, you can sign up to be a member of the Double Shift. I'm all over the internet, so you can find me.
And you're always sharing great links. You're a great follow. I just love seeing every day. Like when you don't post, I'm like, oh no, I want to see what she's sharing today.
I'm actually not that consistent of a poster. I kind of go on benders.
Well, you know, you are raising like 3 under 5, including baby twins right now. So yeah. I'll give you a pass, but just
Thanks.
For a little bit. Well, listen, we're going to be right back with our cool picks of the week right after this.
So Liz, how's it feeling in that podcast closet today?
Well, believe it or not, it's cooler than it is outside for sure. We are like in heat wave territory in New York and where you are in Philly.
Yes.
It's been so hot this week.
I know. I'm so surprised. My closet does not have great circulating air. What is happening?
I know. We keep saying we miss movies so much. We miss. Actually, you know what we're doing? We're going to a drive-in tonight.
Ooh. That
I know.
Is a brilliant idea.
Isn't that great? So hopefully it's cool enough to sit outside. If not, we'll just like sit in our car in air-conditioned comfort out of the heat wave, watch a movie. And you know what? Maybe we should bring our sponsor, Breyer's Car Smart Treats, with us.
I think that's brilliant. You will be very popular at the drive-in if people see you eating those.
Well, I'm not handing them out. I mean, they're just for us.
Okay, just for
other
you.
People can buy their own with the coupon.
Oh, that's right. We have the $2 coupon. That's a great idea. So go buy these right now and go to the drive-in like Liz.
Exactly. And so for those of you who have been paying attention for the last few weeks, you probably know Breyer's is America's number one ice cream brand, something I admit I only learned recently. And they've got a line of treats perfect for the warmer weather, or in this case, the hellaciously hot weather.
Yes. I was going to say, you're being very nice to the weather by calling it warmer.
I know, warmer. It's like 92 with like 104 heat index. Yay. To me, that's like eat desserts out of the freezer weather.
Yeah. And you can, because they come in tubs. They come on sticks, which my kids love. I've been hiding them for the last few weeks. And they're 3 to 5 grams net carbs per serving, 150 calories or less per serving. So, hey, listen, if you're doing the low carb lifestyle, they're perfect for that. If you just want something delicious, they're perfect for that. They come in so many great flavors too. Caramel swirl, vanilla, peanut butter, chocolate covered almond. Now I'm really hungry talking about them.
Plus, to be clear, they're not being being tricky. One serving is one bar. It's not like, you know, where you get those snacks and it says per serving and you realize a serving is like two baby bites.
Nope.
Like the whole bar.
You no, it's the whole bar. The whole and bar. We have a great coupon. We have $2 off. That's a huge amount for a coupon. And it's exclusive. We're the only ones who have it. So go to Breyers.com/bond, download your coupon for $2. You can go to Target, Kroger, Amazon Pantry, really all the major retailers. That's Breyers.com/bond. Get your $2 coupon, download it today, and give these a try, and then go find Liz at the drive-in.
I'll be there with treats, but not for you.
All right, it's time for our
Cool Picks of the Week! Cool Picks of the Week!
And Catherine, you are our guest. You get to go first.
Okay. I want to give a shout out to a present that we gave my son who just turned 5 for his birthday. And it is a good old-fashioned rock tumbler.
Wow.
Yeah, so like National Geographic sells them, and you could also buy them on Amazon or not because, you know, Amazon, well, let's not talk about Amazon, but like you can find it on the internet. and so basically, like they send you a package of rocks and then you put in water and grit and it just like tumbles them, and then you can watch them in different stages, and then you can go find rocks and put your own rocks in. And I definitely feel like my son has gotten much more interested in like all sorts of natural things in the quarantine world life. So I feel like it's like an ongoing fun project that's a really like lo-fi sort of like, it takes like multiple days to like get the rocks tumbled. That's like sort of good for the instant gratification I feel like kids always demand. So a good old fashioned rock tumbler. I feel like they've been selling them for like 50 years.
And National Geographic makes great toys and gifts.
They
and,
do.
Like,
they
science
really do.
Kits. They're really good.
Yeah. So that's my pick.
Awesome.
That's a great pick.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go in a totally different direction.
You are. You really are.
Shockingly,
Liz.
To everyone in my life, and even more so me, I have become a cook, Kristen. Yeah. I'm cooking things, like all the things. And, you know, I tend to be like the, you know, let's order in sushi for dinner person. No, nope, cooking all the things. So here's my cool pick of the week. Grilled Vidalia onions. For real.
Amazing.
So here's what I did. I bought a Vidalia onion, which is amazing. It's like the big, white, beautiful.
Wait, I love how this starts with just like, number one, buy a Vidalia onion.
Yes, buy a Vidalia onion. Put it in a big cast iron pan, which I also now own because now I am a cook.
Okay.
With olive oil and, you know, butter if you'd like, and just let it go. Fill your kitchen with smoke like it does mine. And, like, make grilled onions.
I want to watch your cooking show, Liz. I think you need to have
It would be like
show.
The lady who can't cook cooks. And we keep them in the fridge, and they're amazing. So we're putting them on burgers. We're, like, serving them with steak. We mix them up with Brussels sprouts. Sometimes, like, add some bacon. Like, it's, like, become this staple in my kitchen. Just, like, a big thing of grilled Vidalia onions. And when we have it, it just makes everything taste better.
I love them. I used to eat Vidalia onion sandwiches a long time ago. So I do like and I call them Vidalia because I used to live in the South. So
well, they're really good. And for the price of one onion, super cool pick of the week.
Okay, yeah, for
How
sure.
How about you, Kristen?
Okay, so my cool pick of the week, I just started watching it. It's called Love on the Spectrum.
Oh.
And it is on Netflix.
I saw a preview,
and
it is, I don't know about it.
Oh, so what's so funny is that my oldest had mentioned it to me and she's like, Mom, you've got to watch this show with me. It's called Love on the Spectrum. And then last night I was like, Quinlan, you've got to watch this show with me. It's called Love on the Spectrum. And she looked at me and she's like, Mom, I told you about that last weekend. So it's really not my cool pick of the week. It's Quinlan's cool pick of the week. But it's a beautiful sort of, you know, documentary style dating show. I don't want to like lessen it by calling it a dating show, but it follows people with disabilities. I think specifically autism. I've only gotten into the first episode. So young adults and adults on the autism spectrum as they date and fall in love and try to find a partner. And it is heartwarming and beautiful and I don't know. I was already crying in the first episode, so I don't know what's going to happen in the next one. But it's just lovely. And I have worked with kids and young adults with autism in my former life as a music therapist and their families. And I think the way that they treat this topic, right, is that, you know, kids with autism and disabilities go to school, and many of them will go to school for longer than, say, you know, 18 years old. But this idea that they somehow don't want to find partners or won't fall in love, like that whole emotional aspect of their life is often never addressed in their education. conversation. And parents are often unsure as to how to talk about it. And so this show really goes there, really talks about how they can find a partner and what they're looking for and kind of coaching them if they're not able to read facial expressions or body language. It's really lovely. So take some time to watch it. Like I said, only the first episode in, but already I'm hooked.
That sounds great. You know, actually last week we watched the movie, the documentary Life Animated with all the kids, is about the man with autism who was able to connect with the world through Disney movies.
Right,
and I think it was a cool pick of the week years ago. And we were talking about autism around the table and my youngest stepdaughter wasn't familiar with it. We were trying to explain it. And we said, we have a great movie. And everyone fell in love with the movie. I mean, a movie that all six of us can agree with is pretty rare. But there's a lot in there about, you know, dating and two people on the spectrum dating each other. And it was absolutely the sweetest, most wonderful part of the movie.
Yeah, there's one character on the show. I mean, I say character, but it's, of course, he's a real person. His name's Michael, and he's Australian, and he's determined to find himself a wife. And he is so quotable. I mean, he's hilarious, you know, probably not trying to be completely hilarious. His family is lovely. And he said, I can't do an Australian accent, but he's like, if I got a wife, it would be like holding $1 million. And it was just like so sweet. He really wants to get married. So anyway, that's my cool pick. And of course, we will link up all of these cool picks of the week, including Liz's very complicated Vidalia onion recipe.
I'm going to make a whole list of things you can do with Vidalia onions. And you will see, Kristen Chase, you will see how cool my pick is.
We will link them up over on Cool Mom Picks, of course. So thank you, Catherine. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Spawned. Huge thanks to our guest, Catherine Goldstein, and our engineer, John Bowen.
And hey, there are a few things you can do to help spread the word and support Spawned, which is our own small business. You can subscribe. You can do it right now while you're listening. You can download or save our episodes so that you can listen offline. You can leave us a really nice, generous 5-star review with gushing, beautiful prose if you like our show, of course. And honestly, one of the best things you can do, just tell a friend or a family member or somebody you'd like to hear what we're talking about here today.
Yeah, tell them about our podcast. And don't forget, we have a brand new podcast. It's OutTech Your Kids, and in 15 minutes or less, we are offering super helpful digital parenting tips, tricks, and advice once a week. You can do that actually right now while you're listening. You can subscribe to OutTech Your Kids while you're already on your podcast app. It's magical.
And it's really good.
Yes!
We just did the latest podcast is iPhone and Android phone tips for taking pictures of your family. Hacks that you probably don't even know.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
It is. So thanks so much for listening to Spawn. This is Kristen.
And this is Liz. Have a great day.
Bye.